actually, I'll tell you, the flashlight did come in handy this week because we had a blackout in our neighborhood. Mm. And my neighborhood just goes pitch black. Pitch black. Mm-hmm. Like, can't see your hand.
I think everyone's neighborhood does when there's a blackout.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Sneaky Dragon. I'm Ian Boothby, and who's this?
And I'm David Dedrick.
Oh, all right. Now, Dave...
Did I surprise you by...
No, just you were doing that thing. You got a new phone, so you're saying the thing
yes.
that you do with a new phone
is
when people send you a text, you go, who's this?
You say, new phone, who dis?
That's right. And then you find out who that person was. Now, we're going to start off this episode talking about Dave's new phone, and then it'll get better from there. So, Dave, you got a new phone?
I did. My other phone died. It slowly, it just sort of inexorably stopped working. It was
you literally
sad.
Talked it to death.
It was, well, I don't really talk on the phone very much, which I don't know why, you know, like cell phones. I use it for like two purposes, Facebook and then letting you know that I'm here.
Right.
Those are my two only reasons I carry a phone around.
And then texting the folks at the office with gossip, hot gossip.
Well, I'm there. What folks at the office?
You know, the ones that are at the office, gossiping.
Okay.
What I assume is when you've left your other jobs that were office jobs, that you've kept in touch with everybody and you still go back with the hot gossip and forth with those old friends.
No.
Just write them off. Shake
the dust off my feet. Leave that town.
The new team is face to face. That's how you do the hot gossip.
Yeah. Right in front of the people who are gossiping about.
You guys like get together at the shop and you sit around a table and it's like the girls at the View. You start off with the hot topics of the day. You break them all down and just dish the dirt. That's how I assume things are at the garage door factory. Am I wrong?
Exactly right. You would think that you'd be wrong with that guess, but actually you're correct. We do sit around round tables. There's two round tables though. So there's the cool round table and then there's the lesser cool round table. I only say one's cooler because I'm at it.
Dave, can I make you rich?
How?
Here's what I think. I've got an idea for a garage door.
Okay.
Okay?
Sure.
Would you like to know the idea?
Sock it to me.
Here we go. How many times have you been watching a movie and you have the scene where the guy is really depressed, he goes in the garage, he runs the car, and he usually gets saved, and then there's some sort of point.
Sometimes.
Usually. Yeah. So anyway, here's what I got. Here's what I'm saying.
Okay.
A garage door
that
can detect when someone's doing that.
Yeah.
And when someone's doing that and the garage is full
of
the exhaust, it goes, oh, fuck, I should open.
Yeah.
And the garage door opens when it's full of exhaust. How about that? And it's a life-saving door. And there you go. You invent that and tell your garage folk.
Well, you probably don't have to invent. I guess if you put a carbon monoxide detector on the door so that it
activates the door.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go. But you got to have a door that somehow connects. What you say to the people when you're selling the garage door is go like, hey, listen, we got this safety feature. How's it work?
Are you feeling blue?
Well,
that's
the
first question.
No, you don't say it that way. How you say it to the people is, you know, because you've been an encyclopedia salesman. And you don't go up to the person at the door and go like, hey, are you a dummy? You need knowledge in your head, buddy. How about these books? You don't do that. You say,
yeah, that's true.
Do you care about your child's education? Now, what you say is, kids like horsing around. They like horsing around. And what kid doesn't enjoy a car? Kid's going to get in the car. He's going to run the exhaust. He can't open the door.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing? It's a safety feature for the youth.
That's actually...
And speaking of safety features, we have an alarm.
Oh, while we wait for the siren, would you mind plugging in the computer?
Sure.
Step we forgot.
Why don't you explain the rules of the sirens? Are we still recording
with our sound? Okay, sorry. No, it's okay. It's all right.
Is this going off on the air?
This is all going to be on the air.
That's great.
You know
that's
us.
That's great broadcasting. Fantastic.
You know us.
It really looked like you'd cut us off or something, and that's why I was doing all that. Okay. By the way, we usually here's the rules of the ambulances. Here's the rules of the sirens.
Yeah.
When you hear one, take a drink.
Yeah.
And if you can guess what type of vehicle it is, whether it's a police car, an ambulance, a fire truck. Or other hazmat unit, and you take a second drink.
And what was it that went by?
That was, I think it was just a truck that sold sirens. And it was demonstrating its wear.
Siren salesman?
Yeah, siren salesman.
Siren salesman.
Okay, but back to you and putting the kibosh on this billion-dollar idea.
No, I'm not putting the kibosh on it because I think it's actually a good idea because we have heard in the news of people who have those cars that they can start with a remote key. fob and who have accidentally or intentionally started their car to warm it up in the morning and have asphyxiated in their bedrooms, which are above the carport, because the door to the carport wasn't open and all the fumes were rising up into the
room. All right. Well, let me say this. Those of you out there who are, you know, and I don't want to call you listeny-loos, but those of you that are listening right now, some of you are going to go, you know what?
Whom we refer to as listeny-loos.
Listeny-loos. Yeah. Are probably going to try patenting this wonderful idea, and you're going to make some dough. Now, listen, sure. I'm not asking that you split it with us. You're not going to. You've got your own situations, and you've got probably gambling debts and things to pay off. You know, maybe you have an addiction you're trying to see how far you can go with before it becomes rock bottom. Sure. I understand. All I'm asking is that you throw Dave and me 10%. 10% of this.
10%.
Just throw us 10% of this wonderful idea that you're going to do.
Yeah.
And you're going to make all this money off of. I realize we're not going to do it. We're too lazy. We're busy, you know. We spend editing this podcast a week.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
The hours I put into it.
Oh, it's forget it.
The hour I put into it. It's amazing.
Right. And you don't see that on where Dave does the editing. He's also got a giant mural on his ceiling that he's finishing Michelangelo style.
Yeah.
He's been working on it for the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. It's basically he's doing the Sistine Chapel just in dragons.
It says friends.
Just dragons. It says friends on top.
It's friends.
It won't be in the movie, just in the book.
Just in the book. Be one of the best scenes in the book and inexplicably left out of the film.
Right.
No, for no reason. Because it was two parts. They could have fitted in. But fuck us. Fuck us to hell. That's what the movie people say.
Did you hear that, J.K. Rowling?
No,
I might have been the investor.
J.K. Rowling?
Might even be the investor on it. Well, she could have said, listen, you can't have the rights to the movie unless you put this scene in. She could have put her foot down.
You know, she sold the rights to those books, and she was a poor serving author. I don't know how much she...
But she's making some money off the play, right? I'm sure.
Are they making a play of...
Did you not know that?
I'm not talking about the musical.
What musical?
There's a Harry Potter musical.
Okay, but there's also going to be, I believe, a play. Am I incorrect about this?
I don't know.
We got to look this up.
My blank stare.
I believe that there's either like a prequel, a sequel, a sidequel, or something that she's writing.
Okay.
And, you know.
Well, that's right. It's a, I think it is a prequel?
I just said all three things, so clearly I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't even know why I added to that.
No, well, you did the Dave thing, which is, first of all, no. That's not true. And then you you went, let me tell you. And then you went, wait, I don't know. And that's a full Dave.
Classic Dave.
Dave hat trick. Exactly.
Classic Dave. I got a new phone.
So you enjoying it? You putting a bunch of games on it and stuff?
Well, I don't really like playing games all that much.
No, you're a real workaholic.
Am I?
You don't like fun.
I'm more of a watchaholic. I like watching
You're John
things.
Lithgow in Footloose.
Exactly.
Telling the only, kids to stop dancing.
Only about games. Video games. No, I don't know. I just not that into them. Like at work, everybody's playing like Clash of Clans.
Ugh.
That game is big at my
work. Yeah, I played it for about 2 weeks and I just went, this is too much of a time suck for no payoff that will go nowhere. And we're done. Yeah. It's like they do a similar thing with the Simpsons I'm trying to remember, Tapped Out, it's called.
Okay.
And, you know, you get a little bit of a reward for what you're playing, but at least they do jokes. Mm. Whereas Clash of Clans, the only jokes are in the commercials. So I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to watch the commercials.
Yeah.
And I'm enjoying this more, and I'm not putting the time in, and it's fine. I don't have every morning someone invaded your castle and took all your ooze.
Yeah, it seems to be that's exactly right. And it's, I don't know. I don't know. Like, you can spend a lot of money on that game if you want to.
Yeah, but it just speeds up the nothing a little faster.
Yeah.
But you don't go anywhere. Like, you just have more of the same.
Yeah.
You know, or it unlocks, like, a new guy, and it's like, oh, now you got a giant.
Yeah.
All right. Or you could have just waited, like, 3 days and had a giant.
The other game that's very popular is Boom Beach, I think it's called.
It's the exact same game, basically. It's
the exact same game.
It's basically, it works the exact same way.
Okay.
I played both of them, and both of them I just went, yeah, I'm done. That's good. I got it. I see it. It's the little, it gives you the little incentive just to keep going, just enough, little taste to keep going. But you don't really get anything out of it. And it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, don't.
It says the guy who's playing Plants vs. Zombies 2 all the time.
Oh, but, no payoff at all. I don't even know what it is.
Well, it's just a little...
Who's the good guy? The plants or the zombies?
The plants are the good guys for the most part, yeah. Okay. Sometimes they will flip it. They will reverse it. And if you're playing the different game, which is kind of the 3D version of the game, then either can be the good guy or the bad guy. It's up to you.
Mm.
But yeah, you're basically... the premise is you're a house. Zombies are invading.
Yeah.
The only thing that can stop the zombies are these different kinds of plants. You plant these plants, and you just hope for the best.
Yeah.
And it's all right. You know, you got a thing that's coming to eat your brains. That's a good motivator to try and survive. I'm okay with that. Whereas Clash of Clans, I'm taking your goo, and you got my goo, and I better build a better fence to... It's fine. But I don't get that kind of thing. I'm not medieval type. That world holds no sway for me.
Mm-hmm. You're not medieval.
No. You keep frantically looking at the computer all the time.
It's okay. I'm just a little concerned that the sound got garbled up when we were fiddling around with the cord.
Okay. Do we want to test the sound then to see?
No, you carry the show for an hour. And I'll just sort of...
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. Okay.
My phone, it was weird. It wouldn't charge.
Yeah.
It wouldn't charge. Like, I would plug it in.
Yeah.
And it would not... It wouldn't go like above, they say 30%. It would just not go past that forever. Like, it would be on it forever. So I thought the battery was done.
Right. And you're running your light constantly.
And that started, my flashlight was on the whole time. And that started around like New Year's. Like, I couldn't call any family at New Year's at midnight to say Happy New Year because my phone was absolutely dead that night.
Oh.
And so I was like, oh, that's stupid. So I tried to, and I was plugging it in, and then I thought, well, maybe it's the battery is gone. So then I took it to a place to get a new battery, and they replaced the battery and said, no, it's still not working. And so they didn't charge me for it, though. That was nice. They're like, don't worry about it. And then so I took it to my phone place, and then they said, well, you're almost at the end of your contract. You have a month left, so you'll have to pay $18. So I thought that was okay, like, to buy out my phone.
Oh, okay. All right.
And then so I got a new phone. And then, which is, you know.
Now, are you up to date? Are you where the kids are at with their phones now? Or are you one generation behind?
No, I am right. You know what? In Canada, we can never be right up to date. We will always be a little behind everybody
else.
Because
we have Thanksgiving on the wrong day?
Because we have 10% of the population of the country next door to us who gets all the best phones. And you can watch, and we get the Apples and stuff like that, which everybody gets. But they're kind of more... Like, the phone I have is nice, but there's a better, newer phone from the same company that we will never get in Canada.
Why can't you go to the States, get it, and bring it up here?
Well, because then you're paying full price for it, so you're paying $1,000 for the phone, coming back to Canada, then paying for your plan.
$1,000 for the phone?
Well, yeah, like, Apple phones are like $1,000. If you went and bought like a 6S or whatever, you'd be paying a lot of money for it.
$1,000?
Yeah, something like
that. Wow, what I end up doing is I usually end up getting my wife's phone when she's done.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually what it does. And then it, like, all craps out. Like, right now, my phone just rings randomly.
Okay.
Just rings. Just, you know, like, is anyone there? Nope, just ghosts, I guess, whatever. And it does enough stuff.
I guess.
Yeah.
We got
the iPad. We got the iPad Pro, but that's because we do art on it. And so, you know, that's where we put our fancy bucks.
Yeah. Like the phone I have, I had to pay $100 for it. And then I'm on a 2-year plan, which I'm paying off the phone through this contract.
Okay. So you're, all right. So you pay $100. So if you paid for the $1,000 phone.
Yeah.
So you got both phones in front of you. Mm-hmm. What can $1,000 phone do that $100
phone? Well, they're the same phone. It's just one you buy off contract.
Okay.
And when you buy on contract, you are in the price of your plan, you're paying off your phone.
Okay. But the fanciest phone, like, from what I've seen, I guess it's like the new iPhone or whatever, you can hold your finger above the screen and not touch it.
Yeah.
And which is great for Howie Mandel. But, like, for everyone else, okay, that benefits you for what? Like, that's neat
neat. Yeah, it is.
But what does it do? Like, what does the new fancy phone get me that the other one doesn't?
It does actually have some...
Sell me, Dave. Use your old salesman skills and win me over.
The 6S,
do I care about my children's future and education?
Do you? Do you care about it? The 6S does have some interesting features in terms of like opening windows and having like extra tabs and stuff like that in your... As you... Like, it is kind of nice. I would say that it's not that great that you couldn't use a previous... Like the 6 or whatever. I think, you know, like, it's not such a great phone that... It's miles ahead of...
Here's all I'd care about is like, okay, I want to download something. Can it do it really, really fast?
Yes.
That's it. But really fast?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the because you probably don't have the lightning on yours, so you probably
Even know what lightning is.
It's just a different. It's a the newer Apple connector, like the USB to computer connector.
And it's super fast?
It is a lot faster. It streams data a lot faster, and it
It seems to me this is what you're getting. It's a speed game. Mm-hmm. It's like the, it's like those games you're talking about with Clash of Clans. It's like you get there the same, but it's just a little faster. That's what you get.
But, I mean, that's nice. Right?
It is nice to be
faster. Not have to wait around.
Absolutely.
I mean, let's say that you were watching TV last night.
I was, Dave.
And you wanted to watch Agent Carter. And so
you know what? I think I might have watched Agent Carter.
And you went to your PVR.
Except it was on Tuesday. But yeah, okay.
You went to your PVR to watch it. And for some reason, it didn't get recorded.
Oh.
So then you're like, oh, well, maybe I'll go to TV On Demand, which I have with my cable package.
Okay.
And you go there and you go, oh, they have last week's on, but not this week's. Hmm. That's inconvenient.
Right.
Why would they wait now that it's been broadcast to put it on?
Okay.
They're on demand. But anyway, they do. So then you're like, well, maybe I'll go through a different means to get the show, which, by the way, I am paying to watch. So why can't I watch it on demand? So then you say, I don't want to wait.
Oh, so you're doing your Dave ways.
You're doing your winky way to get this. And so then you got to wait because, you know, you're doing something. You're using a system that, you know, you're sharing with other people and everyone's working together on this thing. We're all in it together, right, folks? And you're
in a communist plan.
Now, if you had...
What people don't know, Dave lives in North Korea.
Mm-hmm. I do. And now, if you had like this, like the newest way to download using Lite, the new Lite internet that's going to happen, it's going to come pretty soon. They're already talking about it. So when you have that...
Well, they've increased the speed of light recently, so continue. So everything's going to get faster.
So when you... So when you have that going for you, it'll just be instantaneous. You'll be like, oh, I feel like watching Agent Carter. It's not there. It's not there. Where can I get it? Oh, it's here. There. Click, snap, back, you know, and then you're watching it.
Now, in your Pokeslow times...
I actually did not watch it last night. Like, I just didn't bother.
Right, but how long would it have taken?
I'm not sure if it's a half an hour, 40 minutes.
We're taking a half a goddamn hour.
I know that doesn't sound like a... But what are you doing in the meantime? You were watching television. You can't be bothered.
Talking to your family.
Reading
a good book. Getting things done. Living your life.
Yeah, yeah. Or you just watch something different. Your dog. Or you just turn on Scream and watch that on Netflix. And then you don't watch Agent Carter. You missed it. Because you, for whatever reason, your PVR didn't work. So what the fuck, man?
Why
is it on demand?
I'm sorry to hear about this PVR problem.
What's nice with my new phone, what I really like about it, though, is that it has a feature that's become radically unusual in phones. Like, originally, the battle between, say, Android as a platform and Apple as a platform was Apple is a closed platform, right? Like, they control their platform. They don't want you messing with it at all.
Okay.
Android, in its ideal state, is an open...
Says, do anything you want with me, brother.
Exactly. It's an open source that anyone can use.
Seems
that.
Like it's got a low self-image. It'll just let anyone do anything to it.
Well...
It just wants to be loved. Yeah. You know what? Have some self-respect, Android.
Sure. It's the teen...
Just be your own person.
It's the teenager of operating systems, I guess. But it's...
now I feel creepy using it. I'm glad I used the adult Apple.
Yes, the adult closed off... Not really liking you very much.
Meanwhile, while you're doing everything you want with your teenager phone, go ahead.
Yeah.
Continue with your story.
That's a little sick. Yeah, you've kind of put me off my my own analogy. But yeah, that was it. So like now this phone is unusual because what's happened is that they've also closed themselves up. Like if you buy like a Samsung Galaxy whatever, you can't open the back up and change the battery or fiddle. You know, it's just all sealed up. Like this phone, it has a back that can snap off, so you could have an extra battery that you could carry around. And say you were in a situation where you ran out of power, you could just open the back up, put in a new battery, and off you go. And it also has room for expandable memory. So I only put in a 64 gig microchip, or what do they call those? SD.
Yeah.
SD card?
You got an STD is what you're saying.
I got an STD. And
from the teenager.
But it
that would let you do anything to
that's
it.
That's right. Well, that's what you get. You're going to walk down that road.
But it's much more open. It'll let you go in the back, whereas the Apple won't let you go in the back. It's all sealed up.
That's right.
But you could just do whatever you want.
I'm a backdoor man.
Insert whatever you want in there is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Go ahead. Keep going, you perv.
So I only put 64 gig in, but you can put up to 2 terabytes of extra memory. Like when you buy your Apple phone and you get a 16 gig phone.
You're done.
That's it. Once you get a bunch of games on there.
Yeah, but aren't we living in a cloudy world anyway, right?
You are and you aren't. I mean, if you're using your cloud, you're using your data plan or you're using Wi-Fi.
Right.
You know? So one or the other. Whereas if it's in your phone, it's there immediately, right? So I was able to put my music collection, which I used to keep in Google Play. I do still keep it in Google Play. But when I was driving, if I was listening to Google Play, I was using my data plan to listen to music that I was taking down from the cloud. This, what I have with a 64 gig, I have 30 gig of music on my phone now, and I can access it anywhere, anytime, without having to worry about my data plan, which is nice. Or I can have a bunch of pictures on it, and I'm not running out of room because I've got too many pictures on my phone.
That's my problem. I got too many pictures. It slows everything down, makes my phone ring when it's...
it's not supposed to.
No, it's not supposed to, yeah.
So it's a pretty... It's an LG G4 is the phone that I ended up getting.
I remember like a friend of mine was showing one of the first like Apple phones. He was showing me like the flashlight. And he went like, have you seen the flashlight app? It's like, oh, is that battery draining app that you got there? Yeah, it's great. You just want to drain that battery? Just put that on. It's good stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just drains and just watch it go. Just watch that bar get smaller and we're done.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's why if you have another extra battery, you can throw it into the, you can pop off the, it's nice.
Yeah. Actually, I'll tell you, the flashlight did come in handy this week because we had a blackout in our neighborhood. Mm. And my neighborhood just goes pitch black. Pitch black. Mm-hmm. Like, can't see your hand.
I think everyone's neighborhood does when there's a blackout.
I guess I've like lived in more... areas where, you know, there's enough sky that you could like still see, you know, what was going on, because there's enough city
you have
light,
a lot of
right?
trees where you
yeah,
are
yeah there's a lot of enough light pollution that you never get that real blackness. But yeah, my neighborhood, man, it was so friggin' black, and the cars just were not being slow. They were just, well, gotta get go. It's like, what are you doing? Look, there's no traffic lights. Settle down. This isn't mean Wild West time now.
Yeah,
you know, just settle down, cars. And I hate a blackout myself. I can't stand it. Just really hate a blackout. Luckily, I wasn't in the house when it went out. The worst. I was somewhere else and then heard that like our neighborhood went out and I was able to like make my way to it.
Hmm.
But yeah, and then everything goes on and then everything shorts out and everything was screwy and we had to replace a whole bunch of bulbs and just a pain in the ass. Boo blackouts is what I say.
It's scary. When we had that windstorm in Vancouver during the summer and it knocked out all the power in Vancouver, I didn't drive, Lisa drove, but we had to drive across Vancouver from the PNE all the way, which is in the north part of Vancouver.
Yeah.
The northwest end of Vancouver. And we had to drive all the way to the southeast end of Vancouver. Or sorry, I'm talking the wrong way. The northeast end of Vancouver, all the way to the southwest corner of Vancouver, through a city that was entirely without power.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're driving through blackness, no streetlights, no traffic lights, no anything. So it was really kind of terrifying because even though we were driving on a road where it was mostly the cross streets didn't have lights, in a way it's more scary because you're worried people are just going to be zooming through them. They should be used to stopping there, but there's no light. So if they don't know where the lights are,
yeah,
you know, the people are just pell mell driving around like crazy. Yeah,
that
it was
is
very
exactly
scary.
How they were.
And
driving.
We had a horse trailer with horses in it, right? So it made it even more scarifying.
So you just got out and rode the horses? Because they know their way around, that kind of thing. Good night vision.
Sure.
Yeah, when I was a kid, this is why I hate blackouts. When I was a kid, up until where I was like a teenager, if a blackout happened, I would immediately start hallucinating. Like just immediately start hallucinating and things would start crawling out of the walls and I'd be seeing full figures in front of me and it would just be like, all of a sudden, let's just start a nightmare randomly now.
Hmm.
And yeah, that was like, that was well until I was like about 14 or so. And it was why I would sleep with the lights on basically like all the time, because I would need to, if I woke up, I wouldn't be able to turn off the dream if it was dark.
Yeah.
And things would still be going and I'd have to like try and find a light while all this was still going on. And I was talking to Pia about this, my wife, and she was...
she's your wife. I've met her.
Okay, that's good. Some of the listeners may not be aware of that. And I was going like, what good does that do? Like, she was saying, well, sounds like it's a fight or flight thing from back in the day. You know, you're in... Like, well, what good does that do? Like a fight or flight thing that like all of a sudden I'm hallucinating things. I've got imaginary dangers around me. Like, how does that...
Yeah,
in the nature of things, aid me, aside from maybe it just goes, be alert.
Yeah.
It's dark now. But be alert. There might be real dangers, so I'm going to give you some fake dangers. Get you up on your game. Get your adrenaline nice and high.
Yeah.
So that when the saber-toothed tiger comes, sure. You are ready, Jack. You're not like, oh, I'm going to take a nap. It's dark out. You know? What's the point of that? I have no idea why, you know, my brain would go, here's a good idea for you. So I'm angry at my brain is what I'm saying. But can you think of a reason that like that would be a positive, why your body would do that?
No.
For the most part, I can usually think of like why your body would do things, but no.
Well, I can't think of any positive to your body giving you false information,
mm-hmm.
you know, like delusional information that you're supposed to react to in an appropriate manner.
I guess there's
like,
nothing positive about being a schizophrenic, and I'm not, but about being a schizophrenic either and having voices in your head.
Well, yeah, because your body, the brain chemistry can't process the information properly, and it's giving you all this false information. And how does that help you? You know, like it doesn't help you at all, mm-hmm. really. I mean, it's possible that we all are getting false information, but since we're all agreeing on what the false information is, we're all getting along perfectly fine. But when it's someone who is going off of the regular false information, you know, if it was false, but it's someone who is going off of that general kind of sense of, or kind of, you know, we're all together on this, that we all agree that, you know, this is how it should go. When someone says, nah, you know what, this, my brain's telling me that this is what should be happening, then you're in trouble.
Yeah. It's like, I always used to think of it as, you know, I've been able to make a living off my imagination, which is nice. I'm like, well, maybe the price you pay for that is, you know, that sometimes it goes on its own mm-hmm. little trip and drags you along with it. It's also one of the reasons that, you know, I never really did, psychedelic drugs or anything along those lines. Because like, the one time I ever did acid, it was like, oh, yeah, it's this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know this.
Yeah.
I can do this if you just turn the lights off quickly. My brain will go to this, or at least it used to. It was exactly the same kind of situation. And it's something I've always kind of wanted to investigate is like, what does, say, LSD do to your brain? And was that the same kind of trigger that I had when I was a kid? That just like takes, you know, whatever the wall is that goes, I'm keeping your unconscious from your conscious. Now I'm just going to pull this up and let some of this run through. Some of your dream stuff run through and leak into the real world, and let's just see how those two mix, because that's mm-hmm. what it felt like the one time I did that.
Yeah, well, it's almost like a hypnagogic state, right? Where you're still in dreams, but you are now able to kind of integrate it into reality. Isn't it funny? I was thinking when I'm driving sometimes, if I'm very tired,
right? You like sleep driving.
It is kind of sleep driving.
Oh, geez.
I'm not falling asleep, but I'm tired enough that my brain is creating a false reality.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'll have a thought, you know, and it'll create like almost like a weird kind of dreamy state where I'm incorporating, you know, just like ideas or imagination into reality. So say I'm driving along, and I'm thinking to myself, for whatever reason, I'm thinking, remember that time I rode the zebra down the street and through the paint factory and he was purple after we came on the other side?
Yeah.
Which is a weird thought you're just having while you're driving. But because I'm in this weird tired state, it will incorporate itself into my memory almost. So I'll be thinking, and then I have to think to myself, wait a second, that didn't actually happen. I'm just thought about it, but you know, and I've made it into a real, but it's only when I'm very tired. And usually when I'm driving where it is sort of you're in sort of a hypnotic state because of driving is very repetitive and you're getting this kind of a lot of similar things are going by your eyes, and so it can create this sort of fugue state where you are in between reality and dream. And I hate to say that I'm driving in that state, but often you do, like when you're driving, you'll get into this weird, you're still sort of alert, but your mind is kind of gone into two places.
Yep.
So yeah, it's interesting. I don't encourage it. I try not to be that tired when I'm driving, but sometimes it's unavoidable.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's the false. I do get the false memory thing sometimes when I'm in that state as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'll remember something I did. Like, I'll go like, hey, remember when you did stand up on Saturday Night Live in 1990?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, no, I didn't. But I kind of go, or did I?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
No, I didn't. But wait, did I? No,
yeah.
No. You went to the Saturday Night Live set. You also did stand up at a different place in New York.
Okay.
But you didn't. But you're combining these memories now together.
Okay.
And da 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 da. And it's like, oh, okay, why are you doing this, brain?
But it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's only when you're tired. It is still, yeah. So I wonder, like, you know, because we do know of people who have, in that state, have dreams of being abducted by aliens, let's say, or having out-of-body experiences, where they're incorporating a dream experience. It feels very real to them because they're not really sleeping, but they are. So it's a very weird state. And so they have trouble, you know, when it happens to you, you have trouble making that distinction between reality and dream.
Yeah. Well, I have memories of when I was a kid that I know didn't happen because it was that kind of the hallucinations. Like, again, I think I brought this up on the show. Like, I used to have like a giant moon that would be at the end of my bed.
Okay.
It would just show up. Mm. And I'd call my parents in and it would be gone by
that
Mac, point.
It was Mac, right?
No, it
Mac
was not. Me? It was a full moon. It was actually, you know what? What it was very similar to, and this is a weird thing, was there was a moon at the end of the Friendly Giant TV show.
Oh, yes. Where this moon the cow jumps
up,
over.
And it's like a little face on the moon. Mm-hmm. And that was the moon that I would look up and it would be at the end of my bed and it would just be floating up there. Mm. And it would just be watching me. Wow. And
well, at least you're
and
safe.
It wasn't and it wasn't bad. Like it wasn't like, oh, I'm scared of it, but it was clearly there. Mm-hmm. And then I'd yell to my parents and they come in and they think I was faking it, right? They it wasn't true.
Yeah.
And it was like, no.
Well, it wasn't true. There was no moon.
But that wasn't the way it was. They were thinking I was making it up, right?
Yeah, okay.
To get them into there and they'd just be angry. Mm. So, you know, I'd be like, no, there's a thing here. Ah, shut up, basically, you know, and I'd be like, no way. Yeah, it was weird. So when the actual like really bad shit happened, you know, and things would like pirates would be coming out of my wall and things would be crawling out of my floor, you know, I'd like, oh, they're not going to believe this either. Mm-hmm. And I'm basically on my own here. I'm just going to turn the damn lights on and leave them on. And so, yeah, I've always like slept with the lights on if I'm like by myself.
Do you still?
Oh, yeah. Wow. If I'm alone. Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting. Yeah, that's I talk in my sleep. So I do have sleep issues. Like,
have you thought of doing a sleep podcast?
I am.
What? Have right you now? Been asleep this whole time?
Oh, yeah, this whole time.
Is this an Inception situation?
This is totally.
Do I need to give you a kick at the end of this? Just put you into a bathtub full of cold water?
You have been inceived.
Oh, no. Yeah. What level deep are we?
I have no idea.
Oh, my gosh.
So far down.
All right.
You're leaving?
No, I'm not leaving.
You've had enough of this.
No, not the slightest. Just hold it, Dave. Let me
start something. Oh, you're going to. If it starts to wobble,
right.
Then we know that it's.
I've.
Oh, now we'll never know. I stopped it.
Yeah, we've put a top down, and it is going forever now.
Yeah, it's going forever. We'll have to. I'm going to hide it from you, so you'll never know the actual truth.
Okay.
One time but what's weird is that the other thing that I do is I will, if I wake up and I'm not fully awake and I'm talking to Lisa, I will talk to her in relation to what I was dreaming. Which she finds endlessly amusing, by the way. Just endlessly amusing.
As long as she doesn't find it terrifying.
That's she doesn't find it terrifying. She just thinks it's the greatest thing.
The devil says hi. What? He's waiting.
And I'll get kind of mad that she's not understanding.
Oh, okay.
What I've come to now, though, is when she starts doing it, I recognize it. And so then I just shut down. I still get mad, but I'm more like, harumph, I'm not talking to you anymore. You're just making fun of me. So
I'm going back to talk to Goblin King.
One night she told me, I woke up, sat up in bed. And she's a light sleeper, so of course I wake her up doing this. I sat up, and I started directing someone backwards. Apparently, they were driving. They're parking a boat. They're trying to dock their boat.
Right.
So I'm sitting in bed. I'm gesturing and I'm talking. I'm going back. Come on, no, it's fine. Back. No, it's good. And then I stopped for a second, and then I just went help. And then I laid back down.
Do you think you were saying help in a comedic way or help in a sincere way?
I don't know.
It sounds like you're doing a joke, like a bit.
I was doing a sleep bit?
Yeah, sleep bit.
Just like I am now.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. And I, a couple of times, you know, I'll get up in night, and I don't think I sleepwalk, but like I'll get up and I'll to do, because like, oh, I got to do this thing.
Okay.
Like something that I'll have to do. Like, mm-hmm. All right, this needs to be moved to that side, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
Something ridiculous. And when I do that, I can see perfectly because it's like, I can see. It's not like it's dark.
Yeah.
And then I do sleep with the lights out when I'm with my wife. And then something will happen and I'll wake up.
Yeah.
And I can see that you're spinning the thing again. And I'll wake up and it'll be dark. And I'll be like, wait, it wasn't dark. Someone just turned off the lights. And it's like, no, you just were not aware that it was dark. You were walking and not aware of the darkness. You know, because you can sort of see a little bit, but your brain was processing it like it was light.
Hmm.
Yeah. What I'm saying is our brains are fucked up.
Brains are.
And you know what, Dave? You don't need drugs.
That's true enough. I really don't need drugs.
Yeah. I mean, I used to have like friends of mine who would do mushrooms and wander around my neighborhood and occasionally run into them. And it'd just be like, you know, I guess I'm a square when mm-hmm. it comes to that kind of thing.
Sure.
But it's just like, I don't need this. I'm fine.
Well, that's.
I can get here so many other ways. Man, that I don't just stop it.
They end up peeing
on my lawn.
Really?
And it'd be like, well, no, I think nice. I've told this story, but it was like,
yeah, tell it.
This was one of the weirdest things. It was, I think it was like in the late 90s, and four friends of mine were doing mushrooms, and they realized that they were at my apartment building, and they went, hey, this is Boothby's apartment building. We should wake him up. Don't wake him up. That's rude. I really need to pee. We should all just pee right here. Then we can all tell him we peed on his lawn. That's hilarious. We should. Yeah. So they all pee on my lawn. And it's I'm facing front, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they're all doing it. And then they leave. And then they tell me that story the next day, semi-proud. Now, every one of them had a major television show that was on you just go, yeah, that person had their own TV series, national series. This person was on local TV, but a very popular local show.
Yeah.
This person was on a show that was on Fox. He was the star of it. And it's not the person you're thinking. It was a different show.
Okay.
And it was like, there's another person who also was on TV. All of them. So it's like, if you had reported this and just like, hey, who's peeing on the lawn? It's the person from this show. You would have sounded nuts.
Yeah.
It would have sounded like you were reporting a dream.
Maybe they knew that.
Yeah. Laverne from Laverne and Shirley. Mindy from Mork and Mindy. Alf. And the car from Knight Rider are all on my lawn taking a whiz.
Well, there's no bigger bore. Well, actually, it's kind of a toss-up, which is the bigger bore. The person who tells you their dreams or the person who tells you their mushroom trips. Either case, I've had both, and both are very dull to me. Because they both are dreams, right? I mean, I know people talk about taking LSD and opens their mind, and they saw the universe in a new way, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I could see that.
But you don't really. Your brain is just, your brain chemistry has been altered, and you are viewing your experiences in an altered way. It's not actually different. It's really the same.
But imagine if you could not dream. Right? You'd be a very different person if you could not dream. Our brain needs, at the end of the day, to take the information that we've had, sort it, mix it up, play it out, burn some stuff off, do this, that, and the other. Okay, now think of like how your brain is affected by that. Now, what I believe the drugs do is something similar. It's like, you know, it takes those same thoughts you've had. Maybe it's like, I'm stressed about whatever this is. And now it changes that stress into something else. So you view at it from a different angle. And I could see how you'd then look at that when you come back to normal. Oh, it's not the same way I've always been looking at it. I've got a bit of a different perspective. That's silly. The thing that I cared about all this time, maybe that is just bullshit and I should enjoy this. Or maybe this thing I was afraid of, I shouldn't be afraid of. Or maybe this thing I should be afraid of, you know? I look at, you know, the most obvious example is R. Crumb, of course, you know, kind of a, you know, a staid guy doing art, working in the greedy. I mean, this is the fantasy, right? This is the story that people like to tell.
Sure.
Working in the greeting card factory, real square, did LSD. My mind is blown. Now he's a genius. And that's bullshit, clearly.
Yes.
There was other stages. There was a whole bunch of other stuff, you know, that led to that. But that's the story.
That's the easy way
like
to understand.
That's
the easy
right.
way to understand it, for sure.
I
can
moved
see
to
that,
Paris and I became an artist. Well, did you, or was there other stuff?
No, I can see that taking LSD, which apparently lasted quite a long time, what he took, I can see that the alteration of his perception, you know, him viewing the world in a different way was a big moment, it was a monumental moment, it was a watershed moment for him. You know, by the same token, you're really gambling, it's a big gamble altering your brain chemistry. Like, there are alternate stories of people like Syd Barrett or Brian Wilson, people who took, or just regular run-of-the-mill guys. I remember there's a great Dave Collier story about a boy who was very straight-laced, very smart, very artistic boy who was dosed at a party with LSD and was never the same again. He just became like the local, the local burnout, you know, and just became this unfortunate casualty, you know, and it wasn't his choice. He didn't make that gamble. He didn't make the gamble. He was just pranked and was terribly damaged by it. So it's a two-edged sword, right? Yes, it can give you this wonderful different sense of you know, different perception, but it does alter your brain chemistry and can have permanent and long-lasting effects that can change your life in a way that's not great.
Yeah, it is a gamble. I mean, but those are the stories that, you know, those are the stories to tell with every drug, which is, you know, it's the person who smoked pot that one time, and then
that doesn't seem quite as
no, but it's the standard for every drug, you know, for LSD, crack, anything. It's just like, I remember like when
say it's a standard, but I mean, we have actual case
absolutely, because there always will be, right? There always will be someone who had that bad story, with the exception probably of pot, which has very few.
That seems more like parental hysteria.
But any other drug, it's like, you know, you get, you know, something like cocaine, which I've never done. You know, you have the people like that person tried cocaine this one time and then this happened and or the person who tried cocaine and then became that artist you really liked and then later stopped doing it and they were fine and everything was fine, you know. So there's that, and then there's
after
that.
After they dissolve the septum in their nose.
Right, but have you seen the albums? It's amazing. Pretty great albums, pretty great. Dave. Seen the albums?
Yes, there's a reason that albums from the 70s are very intricately produced. Very intricately produced, with a lot of layers of music.
And you can really tell the
People had a lot of energy.
The cocaine years of Saturday Night Live, where you just kind of want to go, hey, guys, relax.
Do you think comedy's better? Like, I can see... Like, to me, like, okay, let's talk about, say, Fleetwood Mac. Acres of cocaine went up their noses while they're making their
albums.
You
wish up their noses.
Why? What are you saying?
Well, there was there's the famous way of consuming cocaine that one of the members of the group was, which was anally.
Okay. Yikes. So what, you just use a speculum and then sort of pound it down with a
gavel? You got a helper and some stuff occurs.
Okay. So that, oh, it just blew it up. Well, I think that's in... Wolf of Wall
Frosty
Street?
Frosty the Snowman.
Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, yes, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so then
I'm going to stop this just because I think some audience members may be listening to this and it would drive them crazy like it would me.
I can't hear it.
So. Okay. It's this shik of the top. So I'm going to put the top away while Dave talks about cocaine. And we're back.
But I was just thinking like, you know, when you think of Fleetwood Mac, you know, when they after they hit their big hits after, you know, several years of not having big hits, they, you know, once... Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks joined the band, and they had their huge era of the Fleetwood Mac, the first album Fleetwood Mac, then Rumours, and then some degree Tusk. You know, this huge time period of like super intense coke use and recording and stuff like that. But you can see it being of some use there, where you know you are doing this very grueling thing, but very that takes a lot of minute attention to detail and going through and adding little bits of guitar here and there and changing this and adding little fills here and doing all these levels of different, you know, tracks and blah, blah. You know, there you can see where the energy, you know, where it's just not just for pleasure use, although, of course, eventually all dry, like.
Well, you know, it doesn't become for pleasure. It becomes for maintenance.
It just becomes habit. Yeah, exactly.
And keep you level.
Reaches some. Whereas in comedy, does comedy require that kind of minute attention to detail, or is it just
what are we talking about? Name the drug, and I'll tell you.
Cocaine. Yeah.
Cocaine works, according to Robin Williams. Cocaine works because it gets you talking, and when you're on stage, you need to have the ability to talk and feel that what you say is valid enough that people should listen, and that is something that cocaine does.
Okay.
It makes you think, the thing I'm saying now, I'm going to say a lot of it, and you should listen, because I've got confidence right now in all of the many, many words I'm saying. And if you're a comedian, you should be able to then later, if you've recorded the thing, hopefully, pick something out of that and then be able to use that, you know, for your act. But you can't maintain that for an extended period of time. You can't, you know. Oh, and also, by the way, if you get to a sort of, you know, if you are in it for, say, let's say sex, then when the fans come backstage, you've got the cocaine there, and then you can have some with them, and that loosens everybody up, and now things are going to occur. And by the way, now you're still feeling confident, and you're going to need that in just a little while, and then so on and so forth. Okay. And it breaks down the inhibitions, and that helps with comedy. Because a lot of comedy, I think, is you going, I got an idea. What if a duck wore a hat? And then your natural inclination is going, that's stupid. No. I shouldn't say this out loud. Mm-hmm. Shut up. Sit back.
Yeah.
Now, you can do a couple of things. One, you can have an environment where it's the no ideas are bad.
Yeah.
Just say all the shit that you want to say. And then you go, duck with a hat. And then if people laugh, hey, maybe duck with a hat.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll fucking do duck with a hat. Or you can have cocaine. You go like, smoke the cocaine. Fucking duck with a hat is the greatest idea. Let me tell you about duck with a hat. Duck with a hat's fantastic. And then you go out and you sell your duck with a hat idea. And like, that guy seems to know what he's talking about. Mm. Because a lot of comedy is – a lot of it is confidence. Like you watch old stand-up and it's – a lot of it is really just, oh, this guy seems to be saying stuff. But if you broke it down and told it to your friends later, that's not a great joke.
Mm.
But yeah, he seems to nobody's talking. Yeah, okay. He's holding my attention in a bar for an extended period of time. Yep, good enough. And then sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And sometimes it kills you.
Just I've been reading, I mentioned last week, I guess.
We should really get him as a sponsor for the amount of times that we bring up his book.
Cliff Nesteroff's book, The Comedians.
Okay, we got to have him on the damn show. Okay,
we should have him on the show because it would be interesting to talk to him. But I was just finished The Comedy Boom. I'm edging into the 90s now in my reading. So I've gone from the vaudeville era to the
90s.
The
comedy boom is when I started doing comedy. When I stopped doing comedy was stand-up elements, at least locally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, tell me about the comedy boom.
Oh, just because it mentions there, I mean, the amount of cocaine that was in the industry.
Oh, first time I ever
people being paid in cocaine.
Yeah, first time I ever did stand-up. And we were in a big cocaine town. But like, yeah, there was definitely cocaine on the tanks of the toilets.
Okay.
And the bathrooms backstage, for sure. Yeah, it was common practice.
Wow. I missed out.
I didn't partake.
Like, I don't feel like I missed. I'm just joking.
Again, I was a real big square. So what did it say about the cocaine?
Well, just the vast amounts of it. And it's interesting because it seems to, the cocaine seems to, what it said to me was how popular it was for that brief time that the comedians became like rock stars. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of excess, that rock star excess kind of came into the scene. You know, although to be honest, it seems to me that, and I mean, part of his agenda or whatever, writing the story is to give you the down and dirty element. So every time he mentions someone, you know, Phil Silvers, famous wife beater and anal rapist, you know, like that's not true. Everybody just made that up. But just everyone he mentions.
I've got an explanation for this. I know this looks bad. I know the phone says it's a teenager, but I swear it's an adult. I was just inserting more memory chips.
My analogy. But it just feels like that every time.
Terrible Phil Silver. No way.
I can sometimes do him if I'm like not thinking about it. I can go into his voice.
Him sinking in the car in Mad 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 World. Drove into the river.
That's right.
Yeah.
I was watching him in it's a film with Gene Kelly and Judy Garland. Probably her last film, musical anyway. Called I can't remember what it's called now, but it was in it. Oh man, I wish I could remember what it was. But they're like she's like a very staid farmer.
Okay,
her and her sister. Her sister's more of a flighty girl who's gone to acting school or whatever.
Right,
and she's the stay-at-home spinster who's like running the farm, and wow. You know, all the money's going to her sister.
You know what this sounds like? This sounds like the unofficial sequel to Wizard of Oz. So when Dorothy comes back to the farm, eventually Auntie Em and whatever, they're dead.
Yeah.
Who takes over the farm? Her.
She's got
gets a little older.
Yeah.
You didn't know about the sister who's off at boarding school or whatever, comes back. This is a sequel to Wizard of Oz.
Sure. And so
your dreams are over.
So then for whatever reason, I guess something's gone wrong with some productions, its venue. And so they come to the farm to put on the show there using the barn.
Right.
Gene Kelly is one of the, but Phil Silver is also in it. He's sort of in there as the sort of a second in command sort of guy who wrecks the tractor because he's an idiot. And it's kind of a weird, like, I kind of like Phil Silver's, but when I watch him in that film, I'm just like, why is this 40-year-old man with these kids? Like Gene Kelly can kind of pass for a younger guy. Phil Silver's no. Cannot pass. I don't care if you put him in the brim raised on the hat and wearing
baggy pants.
Rolled up baggy pants with saddle shoes or whatever, you know. No, this looks like a guy in his
big
40s.
Fur coat and a pennant.
I love my wife, but oh, you kid. But it's just strange. It's a weird film though, because Judy Garland, her weight fluctuates wildly during the film, like because she had kind of gotten heavy.
Yeah.
Because she'd gotten off the pep
diet pills.
And then the studio felt like she was too heavy, so they put her back on the diet pills. And then they filmed, it's kind of a famous sequence where she's wearing a kind of a tight top with nylons on, and then a hat, and she does a song. And it wasn't in the film originally, but they felt like they needed one more killer song, and so they put that together. But that scene, she's like really skinny because she had just got out of this diet place.
Right.
And so it's weird. Like watching the film, you're like, well, there she's up, she's down. It keeps changing. And I think it was the very last one that she did. Well, at least for MGM. Like after that, her contract was over and they were like, you get out of here. We've ruined you enough. with our constant...
But you have a daughter, you say.
Did she have a daughter?
With a
point?
Z, you say.
I guess she did have a daughter by then because she had married... I don't... This is terrible things that happen because she married Vincente Minnelli, who was a great director, but also was gay. And so they had a daughter together, but I don't think their marriage was very happy. I don't think that made her happy.
Yeah.
Being married to a man who, you know, couldn't really pay that much attention to her.
Right.
Yes.
You're a wonderful steak. He's a vegetarian. Here we go. Now, when you talk about, sorry, the cocaine, it just reminds me, like, that was about the time that I was sort of starting at CBC as well.
Yeah.
And so you would...
The cocaine would just, broadcasting company.
It was a little bit, you know, because at that point, you know, Paul Anka had just come off having his show.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of that going on, like to the point where that it was an issue that you could sometimes see a little bit on the face, like during the show. You know, and it was, yeah, it was just like that was the thing of the time. I wonder, like, stand-up wise, and I don't know if I've interrupted your Cliff Nesteroff story.
No, that's fine. I was just.
I was wondering, like, if what kind of stopped that, and this is just silly theory.
What stopped cocaine in the...
Well, as being, like, the main thing. Well, no, but the style, the cocaine style of the fast patter kind of da-da-da-da was... you know, the biggest kind of comic to break out and change things around that time was Stephen Wright, you know, and his was, you know, if anything, it was like I'm not saying, you know, he was a marijuana guy or anything, but it was that slow, it was this, and it was the slow pace and actually doing jokes, which you really didn't have. It was, it was commentary. It was the David Brenner, Jerry Seinfeld, you know, kind of observational. Have you seen this show? What's the problem with these? Then it's not a real issue. And commercials are weird. And it's this, the exaggerated thing you're talking about is exaggerated. And you're just talking about how exaggerated it is. And you're the guy who's surprised the things are exaggerated. And it's no big fucking deal. And sometimes minutia. And that's fantastic. And then Stephen Wright comes along with these conceptual bits.
Yeah.
And delivered in a way that shows he's got insane confidence in his own style.
Mm.
And then it's like, well, I think maybe one of the things...
Can I say a theory before
hit me with a theory, because there's another comedian, I think, changed things before him that set up the cocaine thing, but you
Yeah,
do
okay,
yours.
Well, I was going to say that, because I'm thinking...
And who do you think it was?
I'm thinking of Sam Kendison.
Later, though, yeah.
Oh, is that much later? Because I'm thinking
Sam
of him
Kendison's
as sort of...
after Stephen Wright, for sure.
Well, I'm thinking of him as sort of the apogee of that cocaine... style, that kind of cokey comedy, where it was like almost a real rock and roll scene where he had groupies and he had this crazy lifestyle that it is. And I think people could see this guy who incredibly talented to sort of burn out in front of their eyes and become not funny.
Well, he
has well.
He went through his tricks. You know, he went through his tricks, which is like, you know, he's the preacher. And so he's talking about religion. Gotcha. What do you got?
Yeah.
Kind of does some stuff about gays. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. All right. Well, you wouldn't like to have anal sex. If you were a corpse, yeah, that would be bad. Okay, guy, doing that. All right, what else you got? You know, I'm outraged.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's good. I like it. Now, what else you got? I'm done.
That's it.
How about I sing Wild Thing? All right, with this girl from the PTL scandal.
Yeah.
All right. Fine.
But you are, because of your habit, you're kind of stuck in this place where it's hard to get out of because you need to keep feeding it. Mm-hmm. You can't say, well, I'm going to be George Carlin. I'm going to take off some time and, you know, go and find myself and reinvent myself as a sort of new comic or whatever. You're just kind of like, I'm on this train and I'm going
to the
end
of it. Well, George Carlin reinvented himself a couple of times, you know.
Don't correct me.
But it's like where I think things kind of started or the epitome of the Saturday Night Live cocaine comic.
Okay.
Was you had two things. You had two ways to go. One was the David Brenner. That was your Tonight Show type comic. And you had a lot of those guys, and I think Seinfeld kind of comes off of that too. And
sure.
Whatever, and he tightened up his thing. But then you also had Steve Martin.
Okay.
And Steve Martin was playing to the incredible stadiums, and it was the crazy over the top manic, and then small manic, and it's like that was that, and then he took that. He kind of launched from Saturday Night Live, you know, and so he kind of represented that style, the surreal, big, crazy style, and then there was this style, and both of those actually feed really well with cocaine. That's great. Then you got Steve Wright. If you want to be Stephen Wright, you got to fucking work it. You got to write some fucking jokes. That's really hard.
Yeah.
And I think some people, you know, I think that some people like took that, and you had like a Mitch Hedberg.
But I was going to say, there's a guy who was a drug addict, though, who used that style.
That's right. But he did the very loose stuff. But he had really, really good jokes,
mm-hmm.
like jokes. Yeah, yeah. It was very unusual for the kind of the cocaine comic would not normally have jokes. They would just come out with bits and energy and just keep going. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, I liked, what was his name? It was one of David Letterman's favorite guys. It was Jeff. Oh, it begins with letter A. But he did a TV series called Pink Lady and Jeff. Altman. Jeff Altman, I think. And he would do a bit where he would pull his pants up.
Oh, that guy.
And he would be like, you know, his dad pulls his pants up. I'll smack you in the middle of next week. And it was like that kind of nice big high energy thing. And it's like that kind of guy. And I'm not saying he was on drugs by any means, but it's like that kind of energy comic. Just energy.
Yeah.
Pure fucking energy. And there were so many of those guys around.
I think what
it can't last.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the scene didn't last either. The comedy boom ended. You know, it got really big, so big. And then it crashed as we headed into the 90s.
And why do you think it crashed?
Well, I think because...
You read a book about it recently.
I'm reading about it. He doesn't really analyze it. He's just telling you a story. And it would be interesting to ask Cliff why he thinks it. But I would say my guess would be that too much comedy and too much mediocre comedy.
Yeah, so you end up... Too much of the same.
Too much of the same stuff. So you end up... People go and they're like, well, you know, there's like... Because he talks about how like in Denver was Roseanne. And in such and such a place was this person. I can't, the only name I'm thinking now is Roseanne. And, you know, in San Francisco was such a, so all these places had like one like really great star.
Right.
You know, but that's it. Like, so if you think of like Roseanne, well, okay, so for sure, she's like maybe appearing at three different clubs in Denver.
Right.
And then after her, it's just a desert.
Well, people talk about the boom, especially in New York, and go like, and this is the brag, is like, I would do 5 to 8 clubs a night.
Mm-hmm.
I do this one, then I do that one, then I do that one, then I do that one, that one, that one, and you made all this money and it was great. And when I hear that story, what that sounds like to me is, if you're a comedy lover and you're in New York, and that's like the busiest fucking place.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm a comedy lover. I love comedy. I'm going to go to Catch a Rising Star, whatever the fuck was that, Caroline's, it would be. Stand Up New York, whatever. And so I'm going there one night and I'm like, oh, this is good.
I'm going to go to that place with a brick wall.
I'm going to go to this place with a brick wall. Well, that was great. Now, I don't want to come to the same place the next week because it's going to be the same probably MC.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go to this other, well, it's the same comics.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to go to this place. Fuck, that's the same as well.
Yeah.
Everything's the same. And everyone, you know, and people don't have that much damn material unless they're headlining.
Yeah.
So you're going to be seeing the same over. And yeah, you're right. You could get it on TV. There was Evening at the Improv. There was Caroline's Comedy Hour. There was John Biner's Comedy on the Road. There was everything. And there wasn't enough difference in material to make it a true variety show. So you just went, yeah, everyone's observing the same shit. And we're done. You know, and trends are trends.
And I mean,
it became a trend.
Sure.
And trends burn out. And it's like now everyone isn't at the discotheque.
Sure.
So that's just what it is.
Yeah. Suddenly comedians weren't making money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not making money. What do? You give up or you develop. So you have someone like Louis C.K. who was, you know, working these clubs at that time. All that work dries up. So now he's got to either work through it or quit. I mean, those are your choices, right? So, I mean, obviously, we know what he did. But I'm sure lots of other comedians who weren't as talented as Louis C.K. just said, you know what? I can get a different job. I can make more money.
And at the same time, Louis C.K. Kept making his own short films, and he would keep doing other things as well.
Yeah.
You know, so
I doubt he was making much money from his short films. So
I understand, but then here's the thing. The thing about doing those short films is then later when he's a success and he's got his own TV series, when he's, you know, working his deal out, you know, and he can say, I'll direct it.
Yeah.
Well, what have you done? Here's the things I did that made no money back then, but it shows you that I learned how to direct.
Sure. But also doing that gave him movie writing. He wrote some scripts for films as well, right? So, I mean,
and Pootie Tang and many others,
Sure, they're great, I'm sure. And then he goes to Conan.
No, Pootie Tang isn't that great.
that's why I said it.
No, you're incorrect.
I said it with a voice and said it wasn't.
It was great. A funny character on the Chris Rock show, though.
Oh, he was.
That was on, yeah. Pootie Tang was.
Oh, okay. And then, then going to Conan, of course, and we're pretty much being credited with giving that show its tone, which is interesting because I always thought Robert Smigel was the real brains behind that operation, but apparently I was wrong.
Yeah, I
think Conan is the real brains behind the operation, but I'd say someone, you know, people who are the other creative force, I always thought was Robert Smigel.
You need the second.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like when I started to notice Louis C.K. was in sketches on the Chris Rock show.
Okay.
He would pop up, him and Wanda Sykes, and they would always be really, really funny. I was like, oh, who is this person? And then when the Dana Carvey show was on, he would once in a while pop up too, and like, oh, that guy. Okay. Yeah. I'm getting this guy. Who's he? And then, you know, I'd see him do stand up and go, that's not great. And then later on, yep, you got great. And now he's great. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Interesting.
Now the boom is an interesting time of greed, and you know, I think the people running the clubs didn't make them a pleasant experience, because the reason you would open a club is because it was cheap, and so people saw it as a quick buck, and they treat the comedian shit, and they treat the audience shit, and they treat their waitstaff shit. And so when and if you treat people shit, then when the shitty times come, you can't like go, hey, we're all in this together. You know, if you treat people well, then when the shitty times come, you can weather them. But if you treat everyone shit, then shitty times come, everything turns to shit, now it's shit, now it's done. And now you're a laundromat. And then the alternative comedy scene comes, and people start doing comedy in laundromats. And it all comes full circle.
If you're interested in comedy, I do recommend that book to our listeners.
Yeah, it's called The Comedians, and then it's like Drunk Scoundrels and some.
Yeah,
some.
Like I say, it gives you pretty much these two sided things. Jack Benny, what a talented guy who stole a lot of jokes from other people.
Yep.
You're like, okay, don't they all? That's how everyone starts. They start off by, you know, like I think Louis C.K. says that too, that he just went on stage and he just did it someone else's act.
Yep.
You know, that he just learned
until
their jokes.
Someone says, stop doing that.
Yeah. But that's how you start. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're doing music or whatever. You don't start writing your own songs. You cover other bands and you learn how those songs work, how songs
go
together.
Yeah, that's not really how stand-up works, though. You can't just go up on stage with someone else's material. People will shut you up in a way they wouldn't if you start going up and doing Blackbird. People are like, you didn't write Blackbird! Hey! You're not...
That's true.
You're not,
point taken, but you... Even if you're not doing the exact material...
You're not Slim Shady.
Even if you're not doing the exact material, if you're just taking... Well, that's interesting. You know, I think rap is different. I think if you went up and just did someone else's rap songs, it would feel more like cheating than it would if you're covering Blackbird.
I do not know.
But because
I think you should try it out tonight. Let's go do a couple open mics. Hit some up.
My name is Dave, and I'm here. Okay. So then I'm just not going to do anymore.
Sure.
That's over, everybody. Good. It's no good. I've retired that bit.
Yay. The boom is over.
My name is Dave. Because you said yay, I'm going to do it for sure now. Jerk.
Because that cocaine gave you confidence.
That's right. Full of it. And cocaine. The, you know, if you're not like copying word for word someone else's style, you are stealing their style and taking it on stage. So if you have someone who's really, you know, so there's like in the 1980s, there's like 10,000 David Lettermans on stage doing David Letterman. You know, they've got his rhythm, they've got his way of talking, everyone's doing that,
and
kind of ironic.
And no one's more sick of that probably than David Letterman.
Sure, I'm sure.
So when a Sam Kinison comes on his show and is a screaming guy, oh, what a relief. He loved him. I remember like how much Dave loved him. It was like, this is something new, it's not me. Thank goodness.
Yeah. Well, the first time he was on the show, it was like a bomb dropped into the theater. Like it just felt like, wow, that was just amazing.
Yeah, because everyone is doing wry commentary and he's screaming.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone's whispering, he's screaming.
And it just felt like it came from a place of pain and honesty, you know, like even though you know this guy's been doing on stage for a while and he's developed this and stuff like that. That's another example. Dallas had Sam Kinison. Denver had Roseanne. Dallas had Sam Kinison. I can't remember what San Francisco had or Chicago. But they all had their own kind of top guy. And then there's everybody else.
Well, wasn't Boston where Stephen Wright, wasn't that where he was from? Wasn't that
I think he was already
Ding
like...
Ho? I'm trying to think of like... There was... Damn it, I'm trying to remember.
I know he was from Boston, but I think he cut his teeth in the New York... comedy scene. Yeah, he was like a Carolines guy.
Because there was like a documentary called When Stand-Up Stood Out that I think was about Boston, the Boston comedy scene. Mm. And it was all really about Stephen Wright and then some extra folks. And you went like, this isn't much of a documentary.
I've seen better.
I've seen quite a bit better. I don't see what's standing out now here in this, but okay, fair enough.
Not at all. Not at all.
Comedy documentaries are tough.
Mm.
Mm. You get a lot of good names. You go like, this should be hilarious. Okay. Yeah. Or at least insightful.
Mm. No. No, I wonder if something that's so guarded and unconscious, not done, you know what I mean? Like, you know, when you ask someone like, where do your jokes come from? Well, no one knows where your joke, like, you know.
And you're scared if you
from,
do know, then
from a drawer.
Then you're going to kill the goose.
All my jokes come out of a drawer. Like, you know, when they don't come out of a place. They just come out of your head while you're walking
down the street. They did come out of a drawer. That was actually a pretty good documentary. The one about her.
Oh, but she had like her files of all her jokes.
Yeah, amazing file cabinet. It's like, where are your jokes? Right here. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Two whole files on Tony Danza. Like two. That's not necessary. And they're deep.
Yeah.
With Tony Danza jokes. Maybe he's not the boss. I don't know. What do you got?
I know.
Call a taxi. You're not that good.
Yeah. Is every movie use your name that you're? Yeah. It's just a weird. I don't know. I guess if she felt like if she was on the red carpet, if Tony Danza came up, she needed that.
She was
ammunition.
Ready. Oh, she was like, yeah, guns a-blazing. Here
we go. What if she wore like an earpiece in her ear and there was a guy out who would go like, she'd be like.
Bruce Valanche?
Tony Danza's coming and I need some Tony Danza. So then this person would go through her card file and find some good jokes for her and just kind of give you, how about such and such? How about this one? How about this one?
I remember Milton Berle released his joke file, like I think shortly before he died. It was like he was selling it as a book or something. Okay. It was like all the greatest jokes that he had ever done. I'm like, oh, this is like the history of jokes. This would be fantastic. And I got it from the library and read it and not good. Just think these don't age well at all. It was like an old book of recipes where it's like, how about hot dogs and gelatin for your family for dinner? This used to be popular when people were starving.
How about some Scrapple?
Yeah. How about some relish ice cream?
Oh, yeah. Like that gelatinous salad that was so popular.
Yeah.
My aunt still brings that over.
Sure she does.
No one else eats it.
No.
Who would?
Why would you? You're not starving. The czar isn't going to come and take your ham. Why would you?
I don't need to eat that. Now, I was going to say, it's partly the age of them, but it's also the delivery. Like, you need someone who knows how to, you know, deliver. Like, those kind of jokes work. They work because they pile up. And after a while, your defenses break down and you start laughing.
True.
Because it's just so much.
True.
You know? And that's how that works.
And Berle knew what he was doing, yeah.
So, yeah, he knew how to sell that kind of garbage.
But it's to me, it's like an amazing juggler going like, I'm going to sell you my brand of juggling balls.
Yeah.
Well, fantastic. Let me just go. Clunk, 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 clunk. You're exactly. Right, technically.
Yeah.
But now what do you need with this? Oh, you need 50 years of experience juggling to make that happen. Oh, fuck, okay. Start it up. Start juggling.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, talking about, I mentioned Jack Benny as being someone who stole, he took other people's acts. And in fact, he would do them. He also changed his name so that his name sounded like another famous comedian. And he would get hired based on like a misunderstanding. Yeah. And he actually got a letter telling him not to use that name anymore.
Yeah.
And also to stop using his act.
Right.
And then Benny, I mentioned this guy before, Al Boesberg, I'd like to read more about him. This is the second time I've come across him. Once is in relation to the Marx Brothers and the famous stateroom sequence in Night of the Opera, which Al Boesberg wrote. And that was his only contribution to the film, but it's the real standout because they needed like a big standout scene. And Al Boesberg was hired by Jack Benny to kind of, you know, make him better. And so Al Boesberg created Jack Benny. He created the character of Jack Benny.
Okay.
He created the tightwad, the waiting, you know, and the reacting. Rather than having Jack Benny tell the jokes, what Jack Benny does is he reacts to other people's jokes, right? Mm-hmm. So when you listen to the show, Jack Benny very rarely says anything funny. What he does that's funny is his reactions to what the other characters are doing. And that was all Boesberg. Like, Jack Benny had nothing to do with creating his own character, which is interesting to me. But that was the same with a lot of comedians from that time. And Boesberg didn't just do it for Benny. He did it for other comedians as well. He just took them under his wing and kind of created their persona. There were some who kind of grew out of themselves, like W.C. Fields or Fred Allen, who, you know, came up through vaudeville and kind of created their own personalities. But it's a very interesting. This is more stuff I read.
Yeah, vaudeville was, things were a bit more, I want to say, public domain. But it was more community. It was
certainly
like,
harder to control what people were doing.
Yeah, jokes weren't something that you owned. Jokes were something that were there, and you would just do them. It would be the same thing with songs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could write a song, but if it becomes a standard, then by God, everyone's going to do that song.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? And you're probably not going to collect a couple of bucks for it.
There were attempts to stop people from stealing each other's acts.
Of course there was.
Like,
and I'm sure there was some fisticuffs probably as well. Mm-hmm. It was probably, you know, money's involved. There's always going to be that kind of thing. I think when you were talking, sorry to backtrack a little bit, when you're talking about the rock star lifestyle for comedians, really aside from like, okay, if you went on The Tonight Show, you could kind of get known.
A little bit, but it's funny. They say that wasn't the case in the book.
Right. For Stephen Wright, it definitely was. For Kinison on Letterman, it definitely was. And for Drew Carey, it definitely was. And
Drew
Roseanne
Carey,
Barr.
Yeah, those are the ones that are kind of exceptional. But most of the comedians said you had to be on maybe 12 times before anyone knew that you'd been on the show.
But the thing is, with all the people that I mentioned, they all had such distinct styles that you talked about them the next day and went, I remember that person.
Yes,
whereas if you're a David Brenner knockoff, you're not going to get that. So you get on the Tonight Show, you get your credits or whatever, you get noticed. What do you do next? Well, you play the stand-up clubs, but that's not great money. Mm-hmm. You know, you want a sitcom or something, that's going to make you money, sure. Maybe get movies. But so the job that you ended up doing that was like the mid-level job was you would open for musicians.
Okay.
Right? So you'd open for Patti LaBelle. You'd open for Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Yeah.
You know, because they needed something before.
Nothing better than opening it for a giant place. For a band, right,
but
they, to see.
But you know, the venue didn't want to set up for another damn band.
Okay.
That's just a pain in the ass, and it costs too much money. And now we got to clear them and then get things ready for Earth, Wind, and Fire. Look, we're gonna do a thing. Just a guy with a mic. He's gonna go in front of the curtain.
Yeah.
He's gonna do his thing. Well, what if he sucks? Who cares? He just kills 20 fucking minutes.
Yeah.
Then Earth, Wind, and Fire comes on. Do you remember? And everyone's like super happy, and it's no one's gonna give a shit. So
what's the song they sing?
Do you remember the 20th night of September? I don't know. Whatever that. That thing, whatever the fuck I do. I think that's what they do.
I'm not laughing at you. I'm just laughing with pleasure at
anyway,
your version of that song.
So
good.
So the comedian comes on, and the audience goes, boo, and we don't like you.
Yeah.
And so the comedian's there going, one day I'm going to be the guy behind the curtain. And so
I'm
going to
be the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, the rock star life seems like he sees the behind the scenes. He sees like what's happening. He sees the rock star is getting laid.
Yeah.
He sees the drugs. He goes, you know what showbiz is?
Yeah.
This. And so when he gets to the level of, oh, this guy,
he dresses like LaBelle.
He dresses like Patti LaBelle.
Huge, giant dress with a bunch of feathers sticking off of it.
Sure. Why not? And that person's name is Eddie Izzard. No.
Hello.
So they see all this and go like, that's what showbiz is. So that's what showbiz becomes when they make it. And it becomes this cocaine rock star kind of fucking thing. But it's not. And then when it's not anymore, then it's done.
Oh, it certainly is. If you've invested your career with that, that's what's important to you.
Well, but
then
it's hard.
You really
not
are going to have a hard time.
It is tough not to be tempted by that.
Well,
like, if you're the opening act and you see this amazing crowd and you're standing in front of them,
sure,
and you see all this, you go like, I want it. I want this to be for me.
Yeah.
Not I'm the guy that you got to get through to get to the people you want.
I hear
see.
What you're saying. I've been on caustic soda. I've seen the cocaine. I've seen the groupies in real life, and I'm like, where's that on my podcast?
Right.
How come Ian's holding me back?
Right. And then they say, Caustic Soda shoots next door. This is a porn shoot. And I'm like, well, thank you very much. It seems to be the area for both these things. All right. And off I go. And a lot of used car dealerships.
That's
and
right.
That is the area that they record in.
Yes, it's true. It is kind of an industrial. When you drive there, you're like, am I going on the right road or am I being led to my death?
Yeah. It's so sleazy an area that one of the buildings runs a comic book company out of it.
Well,
I'll tell you.
I can't believe it.
I can't believe it either. It was weird going there going like, this doesn't seem right. This doesn't seem right at all. I'm in this business and I feel weird. I don't want to. Do I have to take my shirt off? What's happening? I don't like it. Get me out of here.
I have big news. I want to step off the comic.
Okay, everybody, this is time for big news. Hold it. Wait, we got to do the big news thing. Big news.
Man, you oversold it. I've been at my job now for 3 months. Over 3 months. So now
all
I'm...
All right, but Dave, we don't have time for that. Dave, we don't have time for that.
What?
We've got big news coming. Dave, please.
Yeah.
Big news is coming. Do you remember the 29th of September?
Life roller coaster.
Okay, and we're back. Big news.
Yeah, my big news. Well, that was my big news. I thought it was kind of important.
But you've been for one season.
I've been at 3 months. Well, that means I'm out of my probation period. I'm now officially employed there. Any time before that, I could be let go without cause or notice or whatever.
So you can do anything now and they can't fire
you. No, I can't
do
anything.
You have diplomatic immunity.
I pretty much agreed today that I would no longer do the job while tripping on acid. And that's going to change my work experience.
Right, because I hate that they leave the vials of acid on the ground where you can trip over them.
Why? Why do they do that?
That's just asking
Why?
For trouble.
Why are you leaving
And then
bats?
The floor is covered in caustic soda.
Sure. Yeah.
And now that's just like an ad for the other fucking
I know,
podcast.
I
and you're like, hey, have
on.
A little love for Daddy's podcast, you say. And they go, you got a podcast, Dedrick? And I'm like, oh, well, I don't know.
Everyone knows my podcast. They say, have a good show. Which is nice.
It's nice. Well, the building manager here always like says that too about us. Like,
says, be quiet. Be quiet. Keep it down.
Yeah, shut up. Do people at your work know that you got a podcast?
Oh, yeah.
And do they understand what a podcast is?
Yep.
And does anyone listen to the podcast?
No, I hope not.
Yeah, that'd be weird, right?
I don't want people to. Yeah.
Telling all your personal stories.
I don't want people to know me.
They all know you're having night terrors and talking to your wife when you sleep. Way to
talk in your sleep, Dedrick.
You have night terrors. I do talk
No, you have night terrors.
I don't have night terrors.
Why am I getting aggressive with this?
I have night terriers.
Oh, that'd be adorable.
Yes. It's rather nice.
You wake up, you're paralyzed, and you have three dogs on your chest.
I sleep bark. I signed some papers today. I agreed that I wouldn't take drugs at work or drink.
Okay.
I agreed that I wouldn't.
Do you have to do tests? Do you do the
No, I'd have to pee in a cup. Okay. I agreed that I wouldn't steal from my fellow employees.
So wait, before this, you could steal and you'd be all right.
Yeah, I didn't realize it. Missed out on this, man. I agreed that I wouldn't give away confidential information about the company.
Okay, like what?
I don't know, like plants. I have no...
Name something that would be confidential.
I know, that's the thing, though. Tell us about it. I am so low on the totem pole. I don't even know what, I don't even know what they're talking about. They're like future plans. I'm like, I don't even know what tomorrow brings, let alone what you guys plan for the year. So I
am not garage doors.
I am not privy to these.
I'm trying to think like future plans that a garage door place would have.
They're bringing in carbon monoxide sensors.
Oh, fuck. That was my idea. I'll be at 10%. Here's the other thing. You know what would be nice is get and this is good moneymaker for the garage door place, too.
Okay.
Okay. So you know how people like buying, say, a Han Solo in carbonite? You know, people like their favorite TV show or whatever.
I don't like where this is going.
Okay.
But,
or the like an I Dream of Jeannie bottle.
Okay.
Here's what you get.
Okay.
Now, you can go two ways with this.
All right.
One, get smart garage doors. And that's like a series of five doors that open.
Okay.
Like the garage door, like the doors from the opening of Get Smart / Mystery Science Theater 3000 doors.
Yeah.
So your garage door is open in that way as well. And you got five doors. Now you're charging people for five doors with five different, like some of them slide sideways.
Yeah.
So you're making money hand over fist on this.
Yeah.
And they're just going, I've got the coolest garage in town. It goes, everyone goes like, that guy really gets Get Smart. Or that guy's a real Mystery Science Theater fan. And he has a delightful time every time he opens the garage door. You charge five times as much. Ka-ching, everybody happy. Capitalism works. Screw you, Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, sounds interesting. Now I can suggest that because I've been there over 3 months and they really cannot fire me for such a stupid idea. No. Highly... Stupidly great idea.
Okay, here's the other thing.
Okay, two
ways. Here's what it is.
Yeah.
It's two doors.
Okay.
Okay, one is a plexiglass door. And then the other one is inside it.
Okay.
Projects a hologram of a vicious dog that looks like it's pacing back and forth inside the garage.
Yeah.
So you're doing a hologram of what the garage looks like.
Yeah.
And like people will go, one, it's an empty garage. Why would I break in? Mm-hmm. That's stupid.
Yeah.
Two, there's a vicious dog there. I'm going to fuck off next door. Forget it. Done. There. Once done.
Brilliant.
$1 million.
I love it. It's a million dollar idea.
And if
it's a $10,000 idea. No, or $100,000? What would we get for 10% of that? $100,000.
Sure, $100,000. Now, here's the other thing.
Yeah.
You don't want a dog? A hologram? Too expensive?
Yeah.
Let me tell you what you do.
Okay.
Plexiglass.
But a real dog.
No. Plexiglass.
Yeah.
And then you got to have some sort of reflective surface or something to make it look like the garage goes farther back than it does.
Okay. Okay.
And then, at that point, fill it with bees. Right? Okay. So
who wants to go in there?
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's going like, I want to open this garage door. Oh, yeah, because I want like a billion bee stings.
Yeah.
Like an idiot. I'm going to go next door and rob that guy.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, what do you get? Honey. One, wait, no robbery.
You don't have real bees in there, though.
Yeah, you fill it with real bees.
But what happens when you open the door?
Well, when you open the door, you got the plexiglass, and then the bees are in the middle, and the bees go up. And they go up into the roof of the garage.
Okay.
And bees are fine with that. They're cool. It's like nighttime maybe to them. It's like dark for a bit. And then they go back down. They're like, yeah, it's fine. They got no issues.
So where's their hive? Like, is their hive contained in this plexiglass thing?
Sure. Let's do that. It's somewhere in there. It's in the top bit that you don't see.
Okay.
So when it folds up,
that's
where the hive is.
Okay.
And you got to have holes so that the bees can go out and pollinate some stuff.
They got to bring back the nectar.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, the hive won't work.
Done.
You're pretty much just killing bees by putting them in a box.
Right.
Which isn't very nice.
Here's the other thing you could do.
Okay.
Making your money.
Sure.
What you do is you turn the garage door into one big TV screen.
Okay.
You can do that now. TV screens are cheap. They're cheap.
They do seem rather
cheaper
cheap.
Than garage doors, am I right? So here's what you do. You have that big screen.
They're cheaper.
Now, you, Dave, go to, wink, wink, wherever you go for your movies and TV shows.
Yeah.
play illegal movies on your garage, charge people to come and watch them.
Yeah.
The cops come.
Yeah.
Here's what you do. Open the door. It's gone. They don't even see it.
They don't even know.
They don't know. Cops are coming.
Yeah.
Click. Done. And what can they do? Are the cops legally allowed to look in your roof?
Sure.
No. Where's your warrant? We'll come back with it.
Yeah.
By that point, you take the screen out.
Yeah.
Well, sitting pretty.
Can't you just release the bees on them?
Yeah, you could do that. Yeah, you should probably just release the bees on the cops.
Chase them off.
How many bullets you got? Enough for a million bees? Yeah, no.
I don't think so.
And the cops go, you win this round.
Yeah.
And then they leave.
Mm-hmm. We win. I like it. I like it. It's a $100,000 idea for us. That's $100,000.
So now that you're no longer the new guy, do you get to boss around the new guy?
No, I'm hazing, still the I'm still
spanking
the
spanking machine.
I'm the only new guy.
Do you still have to do the spanking machine?
What?
You know, spanking machine for the new guy.
I told you I can't keep some stuff confidential because I signed some paperwork. It's enough of that. Ixnay on the anking.
They make me a new phone, if you know what I mean.
She may. Yeah, it's a. I mean, it's a job. You know,
so basically, you've got the same thing going as the Flintstones animals.
What's that?
It's a living.
Yeah, well, I actually enjoy it though.
Oh, that's good because I don't think the Flintstones animals enjoy.
No, they don't seem
being
to.
A shadow or being a razor
or being a phonograph needle. No, they don't enjoy it. I don't mind my job. I think it's kind of fun.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
It's a lot of fooling around with stuff.
Horseplay.
Like, not horseplay. I mean, it's a lot of like, you know,
gadabouting,
doing things in your best. You know, putting stuff down and grabbing things and making. Organized
like
heaps.
Putting stuff down. That's what you like doing.
Yeah.
Like you put me down every damn episode. That's what you like doing. Taking me down a notch.
Exactly. I just feel like, you know, all that cocaine is giving you too high of opinion of yourself.
Yeah.
So I got to just kind of take it down.
Absolutely.
Got to take the edge off.
Well, I'm glad you're enjoying your job. That's good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
No, I did a show last night for a thing called The Flame, which is also a radio show on a network that I wish I knew the name of. And I'm going to be on shortly, and I will tell you when that's going to be. But it was a thing called Story Slam.
Okay.
Where they
you put down other people's stories.
Yeah, that's right. Your story's dumb. No, it was like you're supposed to tell a 5-minute story. And so, you know, I agreed to it because I agree to things. And there was 15 of us. And there were some really good stories. And then I told one about the four people who I could call father in my life.
Okay.
And so I told that. And then by the end of it, I was like, okay, I've got enough jokes in here that I can tell this. And I was like, I know I'm getting to like a tender thing at the end where I'm talking about my mom's relationship with this, with the kind of my abusive stepdad.
Yeah.
But I think I've got enough wrapped up that, and I think I've got a point to make, and I think I can do it. And it went really, really well.
Yeah.
But at the end, I cried a little. And it was like, God damn it. I was so, like, and everyone was, it was really sweet and people liked it. And like, as I came off, I was getting hugs from audience members. And there was like, everyone was like, that's beautiful. Oh, so brave. And the person hugging me and the host gave me a big hug. And I was like, oh, so brave. I'm like, it's not brave. It's just, I can't not cry during certain things. And I was just like, I'm leaving the stage angry. Cause I'm like, I always cry at these damn things. Oh man. But it was also very, I showed weakness and got hugs from a lot of very attractive women on the way out. It's like, oh, okay, if I could just sit back and enjoy this.
Someone in the back, way to go, Boothby.
Yeah. Who's that? That's your super ego.
It's your super ego from the 90s.
Yeah, though there was a weird thing because it was kind of an older crowd for the most part.
Yeah.
And so it was all these people who then afterwards came up to me and knew me from old things.
Mm.
And so, you know, there was like the people who knew me from a Relevant show.
Yeah.
And they just knew my name from the Relevant show and they were Relevant show fans.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay. So I was talking to them about that. And then the one guy came up and went like, I wrote a sketch for you in 1984. Like, what?
Huh?
And it was like on Switchback. And he was a mutual friend of like mine and Leora Kornfeld's. And she was a producer on the show at the time.
Yeah.
And he pitched a thing to her and I acted it out. And it was the sketch that I just barely remembered at all. And then I was like, oh, wow. And so I'm actually going to do a radio thing with him. I was like, oh, man, that's beyond a high school reunion thing. That's just so old. And then I turned and this other guy was talking to me and saying how much he liked the Irrelevant show. And then I realized, oh, he was on Switchback. Before I was on Switchback, and he used to do a trick where people would call in, and his deal was he knew the origins of every word, and so people would say a multi-syllabic word, and he'd just break down a fake origin for it on a blackboard, and that was his bit.
Yeah.
And it was he did this for like 3 years on the show, and I was like, wait, you did that? And he, you remember that? Yeah. Do you remember this? Yeah, you remember. Oh, my God. It was so weird, very flashbacky and very emotional. And I'm like still kind of weepy while I'm the past. You're right. I did do that. Yeah. Then Pia asked, are you done? I went, yeah. Like, oh, what do you want? Let's go get steak. And so I had some steak and it straightened me out.
That's good.
After you've had a good cry on stage in front of strangers.
Steak and a shot.
You do need steak and a shot. Yeah. I was like, I really need beef. Even if I was a vegetarian, I'd go like, you got to have beef after you cry on stage in front of people.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's going to be on, it'll be on some radio station, that thing that I did as well. So
sure.
I'll let you know when that's on and I'll be very embarrassed if anyone listens to it.
When you do the radio thing, don't forget to promote the podcast so that I can start buying some cocaine.
Sure thing. All right. I will do. And please keep promoting the podcast at work.
Okay. Yes, I've certainly been. I don't know how that came about. I think because when I was hired there, it's in my resume that I do a podcast. And so then everyone's like, well, you do a podcast. I'm like, yeah. I don't know. I think it was dumb.
And then you say you're Mark Maron.
I actually think I should have said that. They said, what should you do? I said, what the fuck? They said, get out of here. I think it was a mistake to put that I did the podcast in the resume, actually, because I think it was confusing to potential employers.
Could be.
And I think it caused a lot of me not getting jobs.
Could be.
At the time, but oh well, whatever.
Yeah, it's one of those.
It all worked out, and I'm happy where I am, so it's fine.
You know what? Whenever I'm being introduced, like doing stand-up or something along those lines, if they bring up that I write for The Simpsons and Futurama comics.
That's confusing.
It's too confusing.
Yeah.
It just makes no sense. Mm-hmm. It's just like, hey, do you like MASH? This person edited the MASH coloring book. Here he is. What did he just say?
I'm sure you'll be as funny as MASH.
Yeah. No, you can't. You got to keep the intros. What they did for the intros on this show was they said, maybe you'd want to answer this. Who's your hero from any movie, television show, or book that you've enjoyed? Like a hero of yours, someone that you really admire and go, oh, that person's pretty great.
That's a hard question to ask.
Yeah. Mine was a nerdy one. I went Peter Parker because, Clark Kent pretended to be a nerd. Peter Parker was a nerd and just was. Yeah. So, yeah.
Except in those Andrew Garfield movies. He was no nerd.
Well, he was a different kind of thing. He was the loner and the.
He was a James Dean guy, but James Dean's cool.
I don't think James Dean would wear a hoodie if James Dean existed. If James Dean lived
now, he would be wearing a hoodie, yes.
If James Dean. Okay, but the problem, if you actually had a James Dean guy, then he would look a lot like. Who's the guy who was the Green Goblin?
James Franco.
Yeah, James Franco. Like, he already had a guy who looked like James Dean in the previous one, so you couldn't have someone really James Dean-y.
Well, okay.
He looks just like James Dean.
Clint Eastwood in Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Oh, okay. But only that film?
Only that film, yeah.
Okay.
Why? What should I take?
No, it's funny because...
Heartbreak Ridge?
No, it could have been, he's the man with no name in two other movies.
Yeah, but...
He's also sort of that character in Unforgiven,
here's
perhaps.
Here's the thing. It's not the same character in those films, though.
I understand.
But I like him best as Blondie in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. That's my answer. I'm going to stick to it.
Which one is the one where...
You can't change your mind. Okay, I'm going to change my mind.
Sure. Which one is the one where he might be a ghost?
Oh, that is... I know the answer to that. Now I can't...
Really comes in, screws up the town.
Not High Plains Drifter? Is that what it is?
Might be.
He comes in and then when he leaves, it says hell here.
Yeah.
Not hell here, but he changes the sign so it says something. Hell here is from in the Batman 2 when Catwoman changes it. And her thing, her sign says hello there and it changes to hell here.
Yeah. In her, she's got a neon sign in her apartment and someone's looking through the window and it says that. And you're like, stop looking through her window.
Yeah, you're weirdo.
Oh, yeah. What's wrong with you? Knock it off.
She's stitching together her suit.
But you're right. He's leaving and the sign now says hell. And you're like, wait a second. Was that guy a ghost? And
maybe that's Pale Rider. Maybe it's Pale Rider that he's a ghost.
Could be.
I don't know.
It's weird that no one's remade that. That feels like that's the kind
Pale Rider or the High Plains Drifter?
Whatever. Angry Ghost comes to town and messes up the Western town.
I think it is High Plains Drifter. Yeah. He did a film called Hang 'Em High, and I think he did that one before he went to Spain to do the first Spaghetti Western.
He was the principal of a cowboy high school.
That's right. It's called Hang 'Em High.
Now, these kids are trouble. They've gone through a lot of substitute teachers.
But the reason I brought it up is there's a great scene in the film that has terrible continuity because there's like a two-shot. Mm-hmm. A shot like, and so every time it changes, though, the woman's hair is blowing in a different direction.
Oh,
so there's this little strand of hair and it's blowing off in this weird way in one shot. But in the other shot, it's fine. It's like well coiffured. And then it would cut back. It would cut back and forth between these two images. And so you're like, oh, didn't anyone notice that the hair was? Or they just, I don't care. It's a Western.
Yep.
No one cares.
Yep. They don't care.
But you know who cared? Sergio Leone cared. That's why those movies are great.
All right. And then there was, of course, the big Western boom, and then that went down. And that was, I think, just because of all cocaine. Now we'll talk about that in another show. That's right. Folks,
Cocaine Cowboys.
We enjoy... Is that a thing?
That's a movie, yeah.
Oh, all right. Interesting. It's nothing to do with Drugstore Cowboy.
No.
Did the cowboy, the Cocaine Cowboys like ever film, meet though. The Drugstore Cowboy?
No.
Did they ever meet the Urban Cowboy?
Probably.
Okay.
I'm sure there was.
Was that a hit?
Urban Cowboy?
Yeah.
I think it was a pretty big film.
Still within the John Travolta, we like him?
It was still, it was still in the height of the arc before he did the Lily Tomlin one that was very unconvincing.
Yeah.
And then before Perfect, which continued the downhill slide. And then he did a great film called Blowout for Brian De Palma. Do you
very
know that
good film? Yeah,
that is an
great.
Awesome film, but did horribly
by
in the
that
theater.
Point. Yeah, everyone people, had gone.
We've had enough of 70s endings. That's what everyone said.
Yeah. Well, I think they'd also the disco thing.
That's what I ask for when I go to massage parlor. I want a 70s ending.
And then just put some cocaine on it.
No, but anyway,
I'd be curious what a 70s ending would be. Folks, I don't know how to wrap this up now because of that. We like to hear from you. That's how we like to wrap things up. It's like we've started a conversation.
In a bow.
Please finish our conversation. Yeah, that's how you do a 70s ending is you just put a bow on it. Make it look nice.
Sure. A
couple of googly eyes. Yeah. And there you go.
You know those happy endings like Parallax View, the happiest ending in movies. Just love how it ends. Godfather 2, what a happy movie. Love how that movie ends. So cheery.
Yeah, the Godfather 2.
The Conversation.
Yeah.
Another one. Great ending. French Connection. So happy. Works out so well for everyone. Yeah.
Well, thanks for
Exorcist.
Listening. Thanks for listening to movies. Well, no, Exorcist, no. I think Exorcist is okay,
yeah, okay.
For a happy ending.
Yeah, it's okay.
The devil loses, or not the devil, but a demon loses.
I guess.
Yeah. No, okay. That's fine. Until sure. The Exorcist 2, and you go like, it's fine. Exorcist 3, still kicking around. That's annoying.
Yeah.
Just get rid of him. Kick the bum out. What are you, some kind of jerk? All right. Listen. I'm trying to wrap this up so much. We love to hear from you, and here's how you get in touch with us. You go to sneakydragon.com. That's where our message board is. Why not post a little something on there about anything that we've talked about?
Yeah.
Why don't you also go to Facebook? Because that's sort of still a thing, and we're on there.
You think Facebook is fading
out? It's fine. You're going to hit like, maybe, and if you like us, we appreciate it.
What's bigger now, Foursquare?
Well, I'll tell you what's bigger in just a second.
Okay.
We also got Twitter. That's not bigger.
No.
But that's @sneaky_dragon.
Okay.
Sometimes we update that. We like to, we follow. That's the site that I go on, and I look at sites from people who have blocked me as a person.
Is that right?
Yeah, I sometimes do.
Okay.
Someone's talking some smack about me, but they block me. Hey, you know what? I can go on my old Sneaky Dragon account. I can check this out. All right. Good to know. Take a screenshot, and that's for the police later, possibly. All right. Or you can go and
goes in
email
the evidence
us
file.
What I'm saying right now is actually more true than is sounding. sneakyd@sneakydragon.com. sneakyd@sneakydragon.com is our email address.
Don't forget the privacy agreement we signed before we started Sneaky Dragon.
The privacy agreement?
Yeah,
we said we wouldn't let anyone listen to this podcast, so we're going to keep it as unpopular as possible.
We have fulfilled that mission statement.
Well done. And listen, here's what everyone's doing nowadays, Dave.
Mm.
Tumblr.
Oh, yeah.
That's what everyone's doing.
Yeah.
They're tumbling.
Yeah.
Now, boy, Dave, if you told me that we had a Tumblr account, I'd be to the moon.
We do have a Tumblr account.
Holy moly. What, Dave?
Yes, we have a Tumblr
Tell
account.
Me more. Well, we've never mentioned this on the show.
It's called Sneaky Dragon. It's on Tumblr.
Sneaky Dragon on Tumblr.
Yes.
That popular site that people can go onto.
Yeah.
Is there anything delightful on there? Perhaps some video clips?
No.
Yeah, there is.
Is there?
Yes.
I've never been on this.
You put the video clips and stuff on
there. Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, Sneaky Dragon on Tumblr. Go check it out. And why not do thing or whatever you
I've
do?
I've never gone to the page.
What do you mean you've never gone to the page? It updates every...
I know. Because I have a thing that cross-posts on my web page.
Right.
On the website.
So it updates.
Yeah. But I don't go there.
Stop saying
that's
that.
It's too much work. You don't have to read everything I do.
Oh, my
Damn,
Lord.
Isn't it enough just to put it there?
Yeah, that's the sign of a
so
good businessman.
So much work.
Do I have to visit every factory and see how they're all doing?
No.
That they're not putting poison in the aspirin?
Ah.
Fine. All right. Thanks so much for listening. I've been Ian Boothby.
I've been David Dedrick.
And we will talk to you again next week. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye, everyone. Too much work.
Boo, boo, boo. I like to sing about the moon and the June and the spring. I like to sing. Gonna tell the girls that I'm free, right?